Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. We have a really good show today. We're going to be following the money, your money, and talking about what Congress's plans Congress may have for you, and many of them aren't good. My first guest and primary feature on this hour is Tom O'Rourke. Tom is a well-known attorney in the Washington area. He's based in Rockville, Maryland, and I have known him for probably 30 years.
Yeah, longer than either one of us would like to admit.
We were boys at the time when we met. But Tom is a Vietnam vet, worked for the IRS, so he's been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and deals with a lot of federal workers and retirees, as you would imagine, in the Washington area. And I first came across him years ago. I believe you were doing a seminar in Denver or somewhere, and I was going into each room to just sort of be polite and see what was going on and then sign the sheet and leave. And I stayed in yours for 4 hours. I think it was the length of the entire seminar. It was so fascinating. And I learned so much, and it was so helpful in my job, you know, helping federal workers interpret things. So I'm thinking today I could just turn the microphone over to Tom, and I'll go over to the Starbucks and let you do your seminar. But we do have some questions from readers and by our listeners. By the way, our number here, if you want to call in right now and talk with Tom O'Rourke, our number is 202-465-3080. It's 202-465-3080. But Tom, we got one from, it doesn't say here. It said, I see ads on television offering to prepare a simple will and then opposing ads that say having a will is not enough. I'm sure this is one of those it depends situations, but what is the deal with a will? Is it enough?
Well, Mike, I think the answer to every question that you will ever ask any lawyer is always it depends.
Okay, so this guy knows.
And the gentleman is right. Many times a simple will can be just fine, but many times it isn't. What I always tell everybody I talk to about estate planning is that if you have a will, that's fine. It's a very important part of your estate plan, but it's not enough. The other things that I recommend for everybody are powers of attorney. Documents that allow you to pick somebody of your choosing to manage your affairs or to make decisions for you if you ever lose the ability to act on your own behalf. And that is something that can happen to anybody. It's not only rich people. It's not only old people. It can happen to anybody. Anybody who drives on the Beltway or 95 or 270 is just moments away from being incapacitated. And powers of attorney are very, very important in any estate plan.
Well, and people should know that one reason I have so much faith in you, in addition to going to that seminar, is you drew up my trust. 10 years ago, I went into the dot-com business and thought I was going to be a millionaire. So we set up a trust, and we've dealt with that. But I learned about a variety of things.
Trusts are also very, very helpful. When I talk about a trust, about 99% of the time, I'm talking about something called a revocable living trust. Now, you can create a trust for virtually any purpose whatsoever, but a revocable living trust is a legal entity which allows you to create a vehicle for managing your property while you're alive and then transferring it to your loved ones quickly, easily, and inexpensively after you die. And that is an estate planning tool that many people that I deal with regularly use. The primary reason most people use it is because they say, I would like my heirs to be able to avoid probate after I die. And it certainly does that, but it's also a vehicle for managing your assets while you're alive.
Okay, good. And this question sort of follows on that. It says terms. What's the difference between an irrevocable trust and a revocable trust? I mean, other than the obvious, what are they for?
Okay.
Are they're revocable and irrevocable?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. A revocable trust is one that you retain the right to revoke or change at any time. Generally, for tax purposes, a revocable trust is not treated as a separate legal or taxable entity. You continue to report your taxable income the way you always do. You file a tax return, a Form 1040, and you report all your income on it. An irrevocable trust is obviously one which you give up the right to revoke or change. Once you create it, you're stuck with it. The main reason most people create an irrevocable trust is to obtain tax benefits, because an irrevocable trust is a separate taxable entity. And to the extent the trust generates any income, it files its own tax return. It pays tax at its own separate rate schedule. And generally, I don't encourage most people to establish an irrevocable trust unless they give it a whole lot of thought. You better be sure what you want to do.
Hence the term irrevocable.
Yeah.
Chiseled
That's
in
right.
stone. Okay. 202-465-3080. Here's one from La Plata. And he says, I'm single retired federal employee, retired on disability. I have all federal beneficiary paperwork updated, bank account beneficiary updated, and a will filed through my lawyer with my county's courthouse. I also have a medical power of attorney and general power of attorney if I'm incapacitated. I have designated a family member as the executor of my will. Do I need an estate or living trust, especially if I have no dependents? If so, doesn't the estate living trust cost around, oh, I guess that's the fee, cost around $2,000?
Well, he's right about that.
Yeah, okay.
To set up a revocable trust, it oftentimes costs you somewhere in a range of $2,000. It may be a little more, a little less, depending on where you go, which in his situation is an obvious disadvantage. And it sounds like the person who sent the email is really in pretty good shape. For many individuals, a very large number of their assets will not be subject to probate. That's particularly true for federal employees and federal retirees. Many persons who've worked for the federal government, a big part of their financial assets is related to their job, their pension, their thrift plan, their life insurance. All of those assets, all of the assets which are related to their federal employment, always avoid probate, which is the main reason most people set up a revocable trust. So with respect to all of his federal benefits, he doesn't need to worry about probate. The one big asset that many people have that generally cannot avoid probate without establishing a revocable trust is a house. If you own a house, when you die, that house is subject to probate. And just sort of as a general rule, I remember reading an article in Money Magazine in which Money said typically the costs of probate can range anywhere from 3 to 5% of the value of the asset subject to probate. So if this individual has a house that's worth $300,000, probate costs could be anywhere in a range of $9,000 to $15,000. A revocable trust avoids that.
Does that go to the state?
No, it goes to a variety of different places. First, you pay a probate fee to that does go to the state. Secondly, you have to have an appraisal done, so you hire an appraiser. Third, you've got to publish notices in local newspapers.
I've seen those, yeah, that's what that is.
People generally hire a lawyer to help them. It goes to pay the lawyer.
Yeah.
You have to file a different type of a tax return for an estate, so many times you hire an accountant to do that. And that 3 to 5% figure is more of a guesstimate than anything else.
Okay.
It's not a hard and fast fee.
But having it in a trust, it would just transfer over like everything else.
Having it in a trust avoids that. If you were to create a trust, if you create Mike's trust and you name me as your trustee, all your trust is a set of instructions to me as to what to do with your assets. I read your trust. It tells me this is what I'm supposed to do. I do it. And there's no court supervision involved.
Okay.
Which is what makes everything easier.
I guess everybody should read Bleak House.
Everybody should read Bleak House.
Yeah. Another one here says from Philip. Says, since I'm married, doesn't everything go to the living spouse if something happens to either one of us? Can you explain about estate planning? Should I still get a will? Good question.
Philip's question is really an it depends answer.
Okay.
For example, if you're married and you live in Maryland and you have children, half of your assets go to your spouse, half go to your children. If you live in Virginia and you only have one spouse, you've never been married before, everything does go to your spouse. But if you have children with somebody other than your spouse at the time of your death, your spouse gets a third, your kids split the remaining two-thirds. If you live in the District of Columbia and you die without a will, two-thirds of your assets go to your spouse, one-third goes to the kids. So that really is an it depends answer. It varies depending on where you live. It varies depending on how you hold assets. For example, if Philip owns everything jointly with his wife, then everything does go to his wife, because when he dies, she automatically becomes the owner. Those separate rules would only apply if he had assets in his own name and he did not have a will. But I generally recommend that everybody have at least a basic estate plan. All basic estate plans, in my view, would include a medical power of attorney, where you appoint somebody to make medical decisions for you, a financial power of attorney, where you appoint somebody to make financial decisions for you if you lose the ability to make them for yourself, and then either a will or trust to distribute your assets in accordance with your wishes.
And as you said earlier, I think I got this right. Generally speaking, a will is fine for things like life insurance and pensions and that kind
right.
of thing. The house is the issue.
The house is the issue
okay,
for most folks.
Good.
Yes,
all right. Got one here, and I'm really going to let you take over and do your seminar, if you will. But the subject of today's column, and it's things that you've taught me as an attorney and going to your seminars, and that is the fact that most of us are worth a lot more than we think. Most of us are worth a lot more dead than alive.
That's absolutely right.
And federal employees in particular, they're a group who they've been kicked around so much, many of them think of themselves as poor little me. But in fact, the average federal worker, particularly one with an annuity for life, indexed inflation for life, is a well done commodity. I mean, they're in good shape. And got an interesting email as a result of this column this morning from John Charles Ward in Fairfax, and he says, federal pensions are a funny thing. They could be worth a lot more than you think when you take the spouse into account. In the year 2003, Gertrude Janeway, the last Union Civil War widow, died. At the time, she was getting $70 a month pension from her husband's Civil War service. He was 81 and she was 18 when they married. So she had been getting, I guess, a fixed amount of $70 since they got married, maybe 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Right. Well, you mentioned that to me before we came on the air, and I related a real concrete example, a real life example that many federal employees can relate to. I am handling the estate right now of a federal employee who died. His wife is 70 years old. She will get a survivor annuity. She'll get it for the rest of her life. And the amount of the annuity is about $4,000 a month. IRS has a formula to calculate what that pension is worth. And the real value of that pension is about $750,000. So folks who have a pension that will last a lifetime, and when they die, if they leave that pension to their surviving spouse, it is a very valuable asset. You can't spend it now, but it's worth a lot of money.
I want to ask you something. We take a break here on 1500 AM. We'll be right back talking with Tom O'Rourke about estate planning.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Cliff Chiat, Vice President of Sales and publisher of the Gazette of Politics and Business. We'll talk about the top CEOs in Maryland and the top businesses. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security Systems has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Call 888-999-1070 or on the web at Ackerman.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
DOD is now producing what's known as terrorist recognition cards. The Defense Intelligence Agency, in coordination with other government agencies, are putting the cards out in order to increase awareness and recognition among U.S. forces of high-threat terrorists at large. The cards have images of terrorists and related biographic information. Included are terrorists from five different geographic regions: Central Asia, Iraq, the Horn of Africa, and Southeast Asia. I'm J.J. Green.
Imagine coming in for a carrier landing at 150 miles an hour and having to hook your aircraft on a wire with a diameter the size of a silver dollar on a pitching, rolling, and heaving deck, and then coming to a dead stop in less than 3 seconds, often in the dark. Navy pilots encounter challenges like this every day, and Airink is there to help. Airink is leading the development of a fully automatic landing system that utilizes GPS and can be used anywhere in the world. Log on to airink.com, that's A-R-I-N-C.com, to find out more about how Airink helps pilots and saves planes.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Visit ltcfeds.com to find out who is eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting. Long-term care is expensive and is not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the FeltZip offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Visit ltcfeds.com.
As gas prices rise, focus is shifting toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join AFSEA Bethesda and AFSEA Energy May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, the DOD, NOAA, and Interior. View the impressive speaker lineup and register at AFSEABethesda.com/EEITday. Special thanks to premier sponsors Booz Allen, CGI Federal, DLT Solutions, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Tom O'Rourke. He's an attorney in the Washington area based in Rockville, and he is a former federal worker and has been dealing with federal workers and retirees for many, many years now. And he's really part of the subject of today's column on our website, my federal report column, about asset planning and estate planning and the fact that virtually everybody, but particularly federal workers and retirees, are probably worth more than they think, certainly worth more dead than alive in most cases. You mentioned before the break about a woman, you're handling the estate. Husband died. She's going to get an annuity, you said, of about $4,000 a month. And that if you look at the IRS actuarial tables, that's worth, it's the equivalent of a $700,000 CD.
Right. It's like having $750,000. Now, she can't go to the IRS and say, I'll forego the $4,000 a month. Give me the money.
Right.
No. What that is that is the actuarial value of the right to receive $4,000 a month for the rest of her life. Now, some people will live longer than their normal life expectancy and will realize more. Some people obviously will live less, and when they die, the annuity is finished, so you don't get back that money. But that is the formula that the IRS uses to calculate the benefit of that.
But
that's the amount of money you would need to have sitting in the bank to generate $4,000 a month.
And guaranteed, too, obviously.
It's guaranteed, absolutely.
Now, this is future money. This is not counting the money that her husband already collected from
the annuity. Oh, that's right. That's absolutely
incredible.
Right. Well, what I will never forget, one time I met with a lady who was a Montgomery County public school teacher. And I started out by saying, if the total value of everything you have is worth more than $1 million, you at least need to think about tax planning. And she said, Tom, for God's sake, I'm a public school teacher. I'm not worth anywhere near that amount of money. I said, okay. So we started going through the interview, and I said, you know, do you have a pension? Yeah, so I'll get a pension when I retire for X amount per month. And do you have a 401k plan or something like the thrift plan? She said, yeah, I got that. I got a little bit of money in there. I said, do you have any life insurance? Yeah, I have a group term policy that pays twice my salary. I said, are you married? Yeah, but my husband couldn't make it today. He's got similar benefits. And I sat there and I wrote down all these numbers and I said, well, you know, you told me you don't need to worry about estate planning, about tax planning. I said, the numbers you have given me suggest that you're worth about $2 million. And she looked at me and she said, Tom, if I'm so rich, how come I never seem to have any money?
Yeah.
Which is
that's
the issue.
That's a different story, yeah.
Which is the issue that most federal employees face. Many people live paycheck to paycheck. Most people live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. If you miss your paycheck, you're in trouble. But if you stop and think about the value of the assets you have, the ones that are worth a lot of money, for the most part, are assets you can't spend today. If you have a house, it's worth a lot of money in the Washington area, but you can't spend it. You have TSP, it's a nice little nest egg, but it's not available to you till you retire. You have a pension, well, that's great, but it only pays you off once you retire. You have life insurance, worth a lot of money, but it only pays off when you die. Those are the assets that for many people really add up. And if you ignore the value of those assets, you could face a significant, or your heirs could face a significant tax liability when you die.
So estate planning, really, it's for your peace of mind, but it's also a gift to your heirs, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. Now, one of the things I want to say about tax planning is it's getting easier and easier to avoid the estate tax. In the tax bill that passed right near the end of last year, the federal estate tax exemption is now $5 million. So unless everything you have is worth more than $5 million, the federal estate tax is not a worry. Now, there's a problem there. That tax law is only effective for the next 2 years, and unless Congress does something before the end of 2012, the exemption level drops back to $1 million.
Okay, that's a big difference, yeah.
Well, yeah, and the other thing I want to mention, I know you have listeners from all over the place. If you live in the D.C. area and you live in either Maryland or the District of Columbia, both of those places do have state estate tax. And if the value of your assets is more than $1 million, you need to be concerned about the state tax. Now, for listeners who live in Virginia eliminated its estate tax a number of years ago.
Okay, so yeah, those are important, and an awful lot of people, as you say, case of your Montgomery County school teacher, who thought she was probably lower middle class,
right,
is in fact she was worth, you say, $2 million.
$2 million when we added it all up.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
202-465-3080 if you have any questions for Tom or Rourke. Tom, would you just kind of take us through a tutorial if let's assume I'm a federal worker or
sure,
a retired federal worker. I'm not sure it would make any difference. And somebody comes in the office. You and I were joking when you did my estate plan. And I said, I'm going to be like everybody else. This is very simple, right?
Yeah.
And then 7 hours later, still explaining this and the fact. So everybody, given everybody thinks theirs is simple, everybody comes in. But how do you guide them?
Well, you're absolutely right. I have yet to ever have a client who did not have a simple estate mm-hmm. plan. That's always their perception. They know their situation, and in their mind it is simple, but many times they overlook a lot of things. I generally start out by telling people I think everybody needs three basic tools, two powers of attorney, and either a will or a revocable trust. We need to discuss any special situations you might have. Do you have minor children? Who would take care of those children if you and your spouse die? Do you have children who you love dearly and you want them to inherit what you have? Are they capable of managing money? Would you want to give a $500,000 life insurance policy to your 18-year-old? And most people say, for God's sake, no. But that's what would happen if you don't deal with that issue. What happens if you have a handicapped adult child? I've dealt with many folks who have a child who is doing okay in life. They maybe live in a group home. They have a job. They qualify for SSI, the government-based needs-based program. All of these programs are needs-based, and although you may love that child dearly, if you leave assets to them outright, you knock out their financial support system. They don't qualify for all these various programs because they have too much money. So that can be an issue with many folks. Some people, I will ask them, do you have a child who, if they make $5, tries to spend $10? Do they have problems with creditors? Do you have people who maybe set up a business, the business went belly up, and now they're stuck with a big tax liability? All of these special situations can dictate a particular type of a tool they need to include in their estate plan. So that's always an issue. First, finding out what really concerns that person. The real nightmare that lawyers have is when the husband and wife come in and sit down and, you know, we love each other very much. We want to leave everything to each other. And the wife says, you know, I got to step out to the restroom. And the husband says, oh, you know, that's what I wanted you to hear when she was here. But now I really have a girlfriend on the side that I want to take care of. Well, from the lawyer's point of view, he's got to end the interview and say, look, I represent both of you and I can't do that. But you need to be able to candidly discuss these issues. Most of the information I request from people when I meet with them is not because I'm nosy. It's because in order to prepare a plan for you that accurately addresses your needs, I need to know a little bit about your situation. A big issue that is becoming more and more common is folks are worried about, okay, I may live a lot longer. What happens if I have to spend the last 5 years of my life in a nursing home? What can I do to deal with that issue? And then you explore things like perhaps setting up a trust that can allow you to qualify for governmental assistance, probably the ideal solution for somebody in that situation if they can get it is to buy long-term care insurance. And that also tends to be an issue that needs to be addressed. Are these people adequately insured? For example, if you have a beautiful home and you have a very good income and you're able to comfortably pay that $3,000 mortgage a month, what happens if you were to die? Do you have enough life insurance to allow your spouse and your children to continue to live in that house? Do you have enough to, if you have minor kids and you're planning on sending them to college, have you thought about what it costs? Do you have enough insurance to pay for that? And I'm not an insurance salesman. I've never sold an insurance policy in my life, but many times those are issues that people need to address. So in essence, when you sit down to talk to somebody about estate planning, you first identify what their concerns are. You review the tools that are available to help them address those concerns. And then, only after you get through all that, do you look and see, are there tax issues? And if there are, what steps can you take to mitigate any tax liability that you might face?
And I would assume one of the cardinal rules is don't withhold from your lawyer or don't lie to them. It's not going to do
any
good.
If you do, what you're doing is you're guaranteeing you'll have a plan that doesn't address your concerns.
Great. Take a short break here talking with Tom O'Rourke. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
In a recent test, Raytheon's Patriot Air and Missile Defense System successfully launched Lockheed Martin's PAC-3 missile segment enhancement to intercept a threat target. The successful intercept supports General Corelli's testimony that the technology from the recently canceled MEADS program can be harvested for Patriot. He made the statements during his testimony at the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing April 5th. Currently, 12 countries, including the United States, have selected Patriot as their air and missile defense system.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Post Office doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? How are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Babies will do everything they can to keep you from sleeping. And they'll do this for well over a year. They'll throw up on your sweater, in your hair, and all over your car. They'll not only poop in their pants, they'll poop on your pants. They'll pull your hair and quite literally bite the hand that feeds them. They will talk nonstop between the ages of 6 and 9, but they won't say a single word to you once they turn 13. And when they do, it'll likely involve disagreeing at rather high volumes. Still, you will love them like nothing else, and you will do anything and everything you can to keep them happy and healthy. And so will we. At Kaiser Permanente, we offer families the tools they need to grow up and grow old together. From prenatal care to postnatal care to pediatric care and beyond. Because although there's nothing that makes us crazier than our kids, there's nothing that makes us happier either. Kaiser Permanente, may your family live long and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Tom O'Rourke. He is an attorney who specializes in estate planning and has dealt with many federal workers and retirees over the years, and he just sort of gave us a great tutorial. Tom, you mentioned as part of the estate planning, long-term care insurance, and, you know, we both hasten to add, you don't sell it, I don't sell it. But I got my policy when I was 50, age 50, just a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. And people said, you don't need it that young. And I thought, well, how do you know? How do I know? I could step in front of a bus, tree fall on you, stroke, what have you. Glad I have it. I hope every penny that I pay in premiums is wasted. I hope it all goes to the insurance company and I never have to draw on it, or my children have to draw on it for me. My only regret is that I don't think they had inflation protection in those days, but I don't, so I don't have it. I wish I had. My mother, got dementia a couple of years before she died. She was a federal worker, retired federal worker, and she had some Social Security, a moderate civil service pension, and, with her law, and she bought long-term care insurance about 2 years before she turns out she needed it, at my urging and suggestion, and it was the ultimate gift to me and to my kids, who were very close to her grandchildren, because they did most of the heavy lifting, and I helped out too, but they got her in the best facility money could buy, and with her civil service annuity, her Social Security, and her long-term care, out of pocket expenses were minimal, you know, mm-hmm. just incidentals here and there. But for the last 2 years of her life, she had a dignity that she she either couldn't have had or we would have been hard-pressed to afford had she not had long-term care insurance. I guess you've seen this time and again. Huh?
Well, I see that all the time because as people are living older, unfortunately, sometimes they reach a point in their lives where they can't live alone. They need to live in an institution. They may need round-the-clock care, and it can be very expensive. I think in the Washington, D.C. area and in many metropolitan areas, costs of $100,000 a year tend to be the norm. And even if you do have a substantial nest egg, that nest egg can quickly be eaten away when you incur those costs. And it's like any other issue that I deal with. If you perceive a risk, you generally try to insure against that risk. When you drive a car, the risk is you're going to get hit by somebody or you're going to hit somebody. So you buy insurance. When you buy a home, what happens if there's a tornado or a fire or anything? You insure against that risk. You buy insurance. And I know people who sell long-term care insurance can quote to you, if you are now age 65, there's they'll give you a high percentage likelihood you'll live to 85, and the likelihood that you'll spend at least 3 or more years in a nursing home is very, very high. The risk that that'll happen is probably much higher than your house is going to burn down. So when you perceive that risk and when you face that risk, you probably should insure against it.
Yeah, and it's not, as I keep saying, it's not an investment. You're not buying long-term care insurance to make money. You're buying it to save money.
That's right. And it's, as you said, like any insurance, when you buy it, you hope you'll never need it.
Yeah.
When you buy car insurance, you don't hope, well, I spent $2,000, I'm going to go out and smash my car.
Got to go out and... the long-term care open season for federal workers is going on even as we speak. I think it runs through mid-June, and we're going to have a special show on that too. And that's one of those things that people need to very seriously consider. I've been trying to get people that I know in government to take a look at this, not necessarily to buy the government-backed plan, although it's a good one, but to just look at the concept of long-term care insurance. Because as you know, in the government program, I believe, during this open season, you can walk in and be 75 years old and in bad health, but you only have to answer 3 actuarial questions. I forget the term of art, but you have to pass 3 tests, and that's it. If you go on the outside in the private sector and can find a firm that offers long-term care insurance, and many have stopped doing it because it's so costly to them. But if you can find one and you're young and healthy, you can probably get a much better policy and at much lower premium. But if you're like a lot of us, middle age or more, and you have some ailments, the government plan not only is a good one, it may be the one of last resort.
Yeah, that's true. And I think many private companies that sell long-term care insurance will be more than happy to sit down with you and compare the benefits of the government program and the benefits of any program they might be offering. And it's virtually all these people that do it without obligation. They aren't saying you got to pay me to come talk to you. They'll be more than happy to tell you why they think you need insurance and then let you make the decision. So for folks in the government who have this open season, you really should look at what the government is offering. If you don't like it, you can go look with a private financial advisor and analyze what else is out there. But it is something that most all of us need to at least consider.
Right. In the case of my mother, a retired Fed, I urged her to look at the government program. I don't know if she did or not, but she did buy long-term care insurance. I know that. She bought it from an outside firm, and it was literally a lifesaver for us and for her.
And one of the things that many federal employees think they can do, and maybe they can, is put assets in an irrevocable trust so they can qualify for the government program, Medicaid, without cost to them. Well, the one asset you have that you're always going to have as long as you live is your annuity. And your entire annuity, theoretically, could be used to pay your costs of nursing home care. And if you have a spouse, that spouse has got to be able to continue to live while your nursing home bills are being paid from your annuity.
Good. Tom, thank you so much for coming down. We're going to do this
again.
Thank you,
Mike.
Tom O'Rourke, very well-known estate planner in the Washington area. And we'll be right back after a break, and we'll be talking with Steve Losey from the Federal Times and find out what's going on in the government.
Tune in to Fed Central, dedicated to sharing insights and best practices on topics ranging from cybersecurity to sustainability to healthcare reform. Hear straight talk from government leaders and industry specialists on the issues that are shaping how agencies serve their mission and their constituents. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Jane Norris. Don't miss Fed Central on the 4th of May at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Sponsored by Deloitte.
Solving the Unstructured Data Problem by Mark Logic.
Total cost of ownership and how to shrink it. It's on everyone's mind. Operations and maintenance can be two-thirds of a technology investment, a massive expense lurking below the tip of the iceberg. Don't fall into this trap with your relational database. It isn't really free. Small changes cause months of delays and hundreds, even thousands of man hours. TCO will be off the charts faster than you can say Titanic.
Learn how to solve the unstructured data problem at marklogic.com. That's marklogic.com.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Internal Revenue Service says it saw a significant increase in the number of electronically filed returns this year. By April 18th, this year's slightly delayed tax day, the IRS had received 101 million e-filed returns, almost a 9% increase over tax year 2009. It's also the first time the number of e-filed returns has crossed the 100 million mark. The IRS says it's received almost a billion returns over e-file since the program first began nationally in 1990.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
For more than 30 years, FLIR Systems has provided customers with trusted support needed in critical missions. With a full spectrum of products designed to enhance perception and awareness, FLIR's threat detection systems are used by civilian and government agencies around the world. FLIR now provides comprehensive radiation detection and identification for threat detection, disaster preparedness, and emergency management, such as the ongoing crisis in Japan. For more information, visit FLIR.com/detection.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Mike Causey, welcome back to our show. Glad to have you with us. And we're going to be talking with Steve Losey. He's a senior writer for the Federal Times. And I know you've seen the print edition and on the Internet as well. Steve, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, very good. Listen, thanks for being with us. And I have just a simple question for you. What's going on? There's so much coming out of Capitol Hill, that I'm hard pressed to keep the Deficit Reduction Commission straightened from the Gang of Six, plus what other members are doing. It must be maddening for you.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up sometimes. Sometimes I'll be in a hearing and news is breaking on deficit reduction plans, and I think, oh, I've got to, sometimes I feel like I need to be in three places at once.
Yeah. Well, now the pending legislation where are we with this thing that I think frightens so many people, moving from a high 3 calculation to a high 5-year average salary? Where is that?
Well, the high 5 proposal hasn't been introduced yet.
Okay.
You know, I hadn't heard anything. I checked with the NARF group yesterday, and they said they're not aware of anything in the works yet. But it is coming sooner or later. We're going to see a proposal emerge on Capitol Hill to move federal employees to the high 5. When I spoke to Congressman Dennis Ross, the chairman of the Federal Workforce Subcommittee a few weeks ago, he said that he does support moving to a high 5. So it's on its way sooner or later. But one thing that is here is Tom Coburn's bill affecting FERS defined benefit pensions for new employees. What this bill would do is, beginning in 2013, all new hires would not have the defined benefit pension portion of FERS. They just have to, whenever they would, years from now when they retire, all they would have is the TSP and the Social Security portion.
So that in and of itself seems like it's sort of something that would maybe make government even less desirable as a total career. You might want to come in and work for a while, but when you get to where you're thinking about retirement, you'd want someplace that offered a pension.
Yeah, you know, that's possible. I mean, the government would still have a lot of things going for it, making it a good employer, but that is definitely a ding. I mean, people do certainly like their federal pensions. It's a big perk, and it's going to disappoint people, and it may make some people think twice. Another thing that's in the works, the House about 2 weeks ago passed Paul Ryan's budget plan, Congressman Ryan's budget plan, and this has another big hit for federal employees. It takes a cue from the White House's Deficit Reduction Commission. It says Fed should pay half the cost of their pensions instead of 1/14 of the cost. This means that currently FERS employees pay about 0.8% of their salaries towards their pensions. It means they would pay about 5.8%. And then you add in the 6.2% they already pay for Social Security. That means 12% of each FERS employee's paycheck would go towards their pension. It's a pretty big change that Paul Ryan wants.
Major change, but it's assuming that they would continue to get a pension, unlike the Coburn proposal.
Right. Well, the Coburn proposal only affects people hired after.
After, I see. Yeah, of course.
So if you're in the government today, you'd still get a pension. It just wouldn't be as good as what you were hoping.
You know what? I was struck by your interview in the Federal Times with Congressman Ross. Now, he's a Republican from Florida. Freshman, I was struck by how knowledgeable he seemed to be about civil service things. I mean, he was telling you and Steve Watkins, he wanted to do this and he wanted to do that, and he seemed to have a very good understanding, whether you liked his conclusions or not, about how the civil service works.
I would say he's definitely gotten up to speed. You know, the first time I talked to him, he was still learning. He admitted he was still learning. He wasn't familiar with things like the history of NSPS. But over the last couple of months, he's definitely been talking to a lot of people, both in and outside the government, and he does seem to have gotten a lot more familiar with the ins and outs of all these various systems that you and I deal with.
Yeah, I was just amazed at his knowledge. Being a freshman, and of course he's chairing a subcommittee, so he's obviously taking it seriously too.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about these different groups now. The Gang of Six is what, and what's coming from them?
The Gang of Six is a group of six leading senators, including Senator Warner from Virginia, and they are working on a deficit reduction proposal that is hoping to get some bipartisan agreement. I'm not exactly sure when they're supposed to have it. It's been in the works for a while. They're still working on it, but the plan is hopefully, if what they do works, they'll be able to come out with a proposal that can bridge the two sides. You know, we've got two sides that seem to have coming from very different places on how we balance this budget. And if there's going to be any solution found, we're going to have to find some way to bridge it. And hopefully, the Gang of Six is going to find a way to thread that needle.
And we're assuming, I guess, using the royal we, but people who watch this, that they're going to take as maybe part of their blueprint some of the things that were recommended by President Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission.
That's right. That's right. You know, and President Obama, about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago or so, he gave a speech discussing his deficit reduction plan. There was speculation that he would explicitly endorse Simpson-Bowles, the White House deficit reduction plan. He didn't do that, but he kind of took a cue from some of their proposals. He didn't announce any provisions cutting federal pay, federal benefits, or anything else affecting federal employees. But I did speak to someone at the Office of Management and Budget the next day, and they said that changes to federal retirement plans are on the table. Now, this tells me that they're not. It's a card that the White House is waiting to play. They're keeping it in reserve, and it just means that if the White House is open to it, it tells me that federal retirement benefits are most likely going to be cut as part of a deficit reduction deal, whatever it ends up looking like.
And that could be either the going from a high three to a high five, or the Ryan proposal to have feds pay much more, or a combination thereof?
It could be.
Okay. I thought it was interesting, and it amuses me that how the media speculates from day to day. We change about things, but when President Obama did not address a certain issue, it was a headline in one of the papers that said he had walked away from the Deficit Reduction Commission. Well, he didn't walk away from it, correct?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. I think there's some stuff in there that he's not too wild about, of course, but I think he's Obama seems to me to be the kind of guy who likes to keep his powder dry and leave people guessing as to where he stands. I wouldn't say, if he doesn't explicitly come out and say, I like this or I don't like this, I wouldn't take that as a sign that he's rejected it.
Yeah. That seems to be, in fact, there was a column in the Post today, a criticism of his cool intellectual style, and which cited that very same trait of not being particularly committal and certainly not acting as a cheerleader.
Yeah. It's just his style, and it's generally not the way this town runs. This town is, you know, built on people staking their claim and saying, I like this, I don't like that. And Obama doesn't do that, and it kind of drives some people crazy. But I think that with him, there's stuff going on behind the scenes.
Well, you know, given the simplicity of it, the fact that the Deficit Reduction Committee recommended a 3-year federal pay raise, although the president stuck with 2, at least for now. But given that they recommended a 3-year freeze, given that some members of Congress want to make it a 5-year freeze, it would seem to me it's almost a certainty that the federal pay freeze is going to be extended to some degree. Would you agree to that?
I don't know if it's a certainty, mm-hmm. but I would not be surprised if it didn't get extended for another year. I mean, we've got Paul Ryan's plan that I mentioned earlier calls for a 5-year pay freeze, as you mentioned. Daryl Issa's people are saying they want to freeze step increases for the and make the pay freeze absolute in their terms. So I don't know if it's a certainty, but ISIS people are certainly have step increases in their sight, and other people are definitely do want to extend the current pay scale freeze into a total pay freeze.
Really, everything's up for grabs. Thank you so much, Steve Losey. We'll talk to you next week. Really appreciate it. Thank you for being with us here on Your Turn. And remember, we're archived on our webpage, so you can listen anytime. See you next Wednesday. Have a good week.